It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. I'm Dave Richmond, along from Kyle from McGrady's Barber. How are you, man?
I'm all right, Dave. How are you?
Good. Are you okay? Everything all right?
Well, you know, waiting on some tests to go from the doctor, but you caught me right then with a Milky Way in my mouth. So.
Okay. All right. I won't touch that one. Hey, Bubba Rosenbaum, what's up?
What's going on, guys?
Well, another day in paradise, enjoying our success being a Pirate. It's always great to be a Pirate, but we've got a lot of great things to talk about in a very short period of time. And, Bubba, where do you want to start?
Yes, we have a huge show. We'll be talking to the likes of Robert Woodard, the head coach of the Charlotte 49ers. Pirates will be out my way this weekend, starting at 3 o'clock on Friday afternoon, taking on Charlotte. So we'll catch up with him and get an inside look at the 49ers. And then also Jason Beatty of Knights 24/7. We'll talk about the Pirates and UCF, a final regular season game of the season on Sunday afternoon. And then also Joe Myencic. He's a Greenville native. He also is an ECU alum and worked at ECU for a brief time. And now he's out with the Houston Roughnecks in the XFL. But let's go ahead and let's get things underway, and let's go to that interview with Robert Woodard, the head coach of the Charlotte 49ers.
Pirates have the first, hard to believe, first road trip, first road series this week, and Bubba, one of our good guests, coming back on again with us.
Yeah, after the midweek game with the Liberty Flames later on today, today being Wednesday, and the Pirates will be traveling to the western part of the state this weekend to my neck of the woods, taking on the Charlotte 49ers, and right now to preview that matchup, we're very excited to welcome back to the program the first-year head coach of the 49ers, Robert Woodard. Coach, welcome in.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me, and excited to just talk college baseball with you.
Absolutely. Very excited about the game. I got a couple questions we'll ask later on about that very thing, but certainly wanted to have you back on. Pirates and 49ers this weekend. I know you guys are excited to be hosting the Pirates this weekend.
Yeah, no, it's exciting. I mean, there's, you know, it's two great fan bases. You know, it's a series that's going to be played here at our place this year, and then we're going to return the favor and head over to Greenville next year for three games. So it should be two great series over 2 years, and you know, it'll be a lot of fun. It'll be a good battle between the two teams.
Coach, we talked to you about a month ago on our statewide preview, and since then, take a look at things, and your ball club's 8-5, and you've won 7 out of your last 9, including sweeps of UMBC, and then also St. John's, a program that's traditionally very strong. So talk about, and most recently, you did lose a midweek game last night at Coastal Carolina, 15-6, but just talk about your ball club, what you've learned through the first quarter of the season.
Yeah, no, I mean, we've been pretty well tested here out of the gate with, like you mentioned, some strong programs. And, we're a team that's, we don't believe that we're going to be a team that where we are week one is where we're going to be week 15. So we're trying to really stay centered on getting better with each practice between games. And then, looking at each game is almost like kind of like a quiz or a test where we try to, just see where we're at. So, obviously last night didn't go how we would have liked. So we've got to continue to improve, our depth in some areas once we get to that kind of fourth or fifth week of the game. But, we've got an awesome group of kids that are working extremely hard. And, like I said, we'll have another good test in this weekend with East Carolina's. As you guys know, they're a really well-coached, talented club.
Taking a look at the rotation for this weekend, just looking over the numbers, your weekend rotation has been very solid up to this point. So talk about things with those Friday, Saturday, Sunday guys, starting with your Friday arm, Bryce McGowan.
Yeah, Bryce is he's a sophomore, in-state product from Cary. Just really – really talented pitcher, kind of reminds me of a former teammate of mine that I had back when I was a player, Adam Warren, who's pitched with a few different clubs in the big leagues the last you know, 6 or 7 years. But just, you know, stuff-wise, he's got good stuff. He mixes his pitches well. He's very athletic, so he can do some things in terms of controlling the running game and fielding his position well that, you know, you need all your pitchers to do. And he's just a great competitor and works extremely hard between outings so that, you know, you can just see it translate into there's not a whole lot of thinking going on when he's out there. He's kind of just trusting all the preparation he puts in between outings. So, you know, Bryce has been great for us here the first 3 weeks. And then we've got a senior right-handed pitcher, Ryan Chanskowski, pitching on Saturday for us right now, who's, you know, again, just another well-prepared kid that works extremely hard between outings and, you know, kind of come at guys with any pitch, any count, can go both sides of the plate, up and down, so change speeds. So, and he's a senior, so he's, you know, he's been through kind of the college game for a few years now and kind of knows the speed and the pace and that sort of thing. And then on Sunday we've got Andrew Roach, who's a junior right-handed pitcher, junior college transfer, who, again, yeah, it's just, he's, you know, similar to Ryan, just done a really nice job of, you know, attacking hitters with all of his pitches and, you know, really being able to throw anything in any count, change them up and that sort of thing. So, it's a fun group of guys, and, they work like, you know, like you've heard me say a few times about them, they put a lot of time and effort in between hours. I mean, they're in the weight room right now lifting, and we'll, you know, they've preparing. So, it's a good group. It's kind of gotten to a place now where those three guys are really competing against each other to, you know, kind of try to be our starting pitcher of the week.
One of the things that really jumped off the page at me, Coach, between your Saturday and Sunday guys, Chanskowski and Roach, in a combined 35 and a third innings, they had only allowed 18 hits.
Yeah, I mean, they've done a nice job through 3 weeks. Again, just really making good pitches. You know, again, mixing, not really falling into any patterns and having the ability to work in and out on top of up and down. So, again, that's something we want to try to continue going into this weekend and moving forward. But, yeah, the first 3 weeks of the year, they've done a nice job with it for sure.
Taking a look at your bullpen, I know Jackson Boss and then also Colby and Bruce, and so they have been guys that have been very reliable. And so talk about those two and then other arms that may be key ingredients moving forward.
Well, you kind of have, with those two guys, you kind of have two like polar opposite stories. I mean, you have Colby Bruce, who's a senior. He's been in the program for 4 years, who's steadily just improved and gotten better year after year. He's a stopper of the year finalist preseason, you know, amongst, I think, the 70 pitchers or so throughout the country that are up for the award. He's one of them. So, you know, he's worked really hard to put himself into that discussion. Just a great kid. And then you mentioned Jackson Boss. Jackson Boss is one of, if not our best stories on the team, but from the standpoint that, I mean, he was just a regular student here on our campus and engineering major, sent our coaching staff an email, I think in late November, asking if he could come throw for us. So we followed up and he came in there like the first week in December and threw a bullpen for us and really impressed us, honestly. And so we gave him a shot to come on in the preseason and try to make our team, and he did. So, and then, you know, you guys can look at the numbers yourselves. He's got 9 appearances and 13 innings. He's got to be top 5 in the country in appearances. You know, he works extremely hard, takes great care of his body and his arm. Really mentally tough kid. So that's been a fun story here. You know, the first 3 weeks or so of the season for sure.
Absolutely, that has to be one of the top stories in college baseball, no doubt about it.
he just sent us an email and. He was a student just going to class all fall. He didn't even train or practice with us all fall.
Now, what class did you say he is?
He is a redshirt sophomore.
Okay. So had he been, I know you said he's in the engineering program, had he been a student elsewhere, or has he been at Charlotte all along?
Yeah, no, he started at Youngstown State. He was there for a year, and then he's been at this is his second year at Charlotte. And you know, he didn't play baseball last year. He just trained. So right. he hadn't even played Division I baseball for like the last year and a half, 2 years. You know, so just you can imagine how hard a kid has to work to, you know, to be able to step into this level and be doing what he's doing. But he's an awesome kid, and I've been coaching Division I now for 9 or 10 years, and you know, I haven't coached another walk-on quite like him yet. You know, when I was at Wilmington, we had a pitcher, Justin Livengood, that walked on at Wilmington the year before I got there, just showed up and tried out, and he ended up being a 10th-round draft pick with the Padres. That's probably the next closest story, but, you know, stories like Jackson Boss, they don't happen too often. It's pretty rare what he's doing right now.
That's funny you bring up Justin Livengood. Back, I guess, right after I got out of college, I was working and coaching there at Ledford High School where Justin Livengood played. So, yeah, that was to me, that wasn't that surprising after the way he had pitched for us and led us deep into the state playoffs to see him go down and earn the opportunity that he did at UNC Wilmington. And then not that I necessarily thought he was going to be a 10th-round draft pick, but, yeah, I knew his makeup, and, yeah, it wasn't as surprising, but, yeah, it was great to see him have the success that he did, but kind of.
Yeah, very similar, and yeah, just very similar, and just, you know, the common denominator is I think, you know, Jackson's just, like I said, he's just an awesome kid, but Justin Livengood, as you know, he's just an all-time human being, so, you know, that's about the two, you know, the two most, that's probably the story most similar I can think of in 10 years of coaching.
Yeah, no doubt. And kind of shifting gears and talking about your lineup, tell us about some of your top bats up to this point, not even necessarily in terms of average, because you know how that can be, but just as far as getting quality at bats.
Yeah, no, just like you said, I mean, I know Coach Godwin is big on quality at bats as well, and we are here too. And just, you know, we usually start out with Carson Johnson up there at the top. He's a high on base percentage guy. He's got our best, you know, probably our best plate discipline in terms of, you know, trying to do damage on pitches in the zone and not really chasing. So senior second baseman. So he usually kind of leads us off. We've had a freshman left fielder, Dominic Kalali, in left field for us. He's played a fantastic left field, and you know, he's really come out of the gate swinging a good bat for us, and finding ways to get on base in the two hole, both left-handed hitters. So we've got those two guys kind of lead us off, and then from there we've kind of been playing the numbers and the matchups, and you know, who's seeing the ball well from there. So freshman David McCabe, switch hitting infielder for us. He's played short, he's played first, he's played third. Rafi Vasquez, left-handed hitter, senior, first baseman, DH, is usually in there in the mix. And then right-handed hitting, catcher, right fielder, Craig Keuchel. Usually those three are kind of interchangeable, 3, 4, 5, just kind of depending on the matchup and what we're trying to do.
Taking a look at your ball club defensively, I know here lately you've the last couple games you've committed – multiple errors, but prior to that, you have three consecutive games without an E. So talk about your ball club defensively. They seem to be playing better lately, throwing out those last couple games.
Yeah, no, I know what you're saying. It's just, you know, it's consistency, right? Like that's the name of the game. I mean, you look at the teams that are most successful in college baseball. They're the teams that it's not necessarily always about beating your opponent. It's just kind of playing good baseball and not beating yourself. So when we, you know, I mean, as you touched on, when we play good baseball and we, you know, re-record the outs that we're supposed to record, which we've done for the most part over the course of the season, you know, we've had success. You know, and then as you touched on, when, you know, the times where, you know, we've got the opportunity to make an out and we don't, you know, those have been the situations where, you know, we've kind of beat ourselves a little bit. So But that's not just us. That's pretty much every team in college baseball. And, you know, one of the biggest separators, I think, between the teams that, you know, you look at the top, you know, the difference between kind of the top 25 ranked teams versus the next 25 ranked teams, a lot of times it's not necessarily about star power. It's more, it's about just consistency and playing, you know, playing a fundamental game in all facets, whether it's on the mound and, you know, limiting free bases and pounding the strike zone versus, you know, your offenses that can hit for power and get on base, defenses that make the routine plays, and base runners that are aggressive but also smart and not running themselves out of innings. So, you know, when we do those things well, we've had success. You know, and when we've kind of had some lapses or some miscues, then yeah, I mean it's burned us. But you know, that kind of gets back to what I said earlier on, where we want to be a team that from week one to week 15, 16, 17, we continue to improve. So, you know, we've got, like last night we had some things that got exposed. So we're at practice this afternoon and we'll be addressing those things in practice. That's kind of how we operate. Hopefully that gives you a better sense.
Coach, thank you so much. As always, we appreciate your time and good luck to you this weekend and beyond and a conference play with Conference USA, and love to have you back on again soon.
Yeah, we're looking forward to playing East Carolina. It's a great program with a lot of tradition. Coach Godwin, Coach Palumbo, and Dietrich, those guys, they do a great job. So it should be a fun series, and looking forward to some great atmospheres here at the Hayes this weekend.
All right, always great to catch up. He's a great guy and likes talking college baseball. So, Coach, thank you so much. And
you know, all the college baseball coaches in this state seem to be pretty good guys.
Yeah, you know, I think the great thing about college baseball, it's maybe that's why I love it so much, not only the game, but I think it's very underrated. And I think they are all about collectively growing the game. And I think that, unfortunately, sometimes I think there's not ours, but there's some ADs that I believe, based on what we with the assistant, that extra assistant we were talking about last year, that they don't want the college game to grow, but that's just my opinion. I'm not saying John Gilbert or most ADs, but there are some that want to keep it like
a niche
sport.
I think what it is, Dave, I think a lot of schools don't think that there's money to be made in it or can't
right.
make money at it, and so they don't want to spend the money. I think that has a lot to do with it, as far as adding that third assistant or not pushing the sport. But that's certainly not the case in East Carolina. You could, you know, baseball was supposed to be a non-revenue sport. I would venture to say at East Carolina it is not a non-revenue sport. I would think it's profitable.
No, I've heard it's making a little bit of money. I'm not sure the exact numbers. Bubba's a numbers guy, not me. But I've heard at the very worst it's breaking even. So that's what I've been told over the last few years. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but that's what I've heard. So.
And you kind of wonder if we could charge a little bit more for baseball tickets.
Yeah, I mean, especially you go to Omaha, you know, and keep doing what you're doing. I certainly think so. Speaking of baseball, guys, I want to get you both of you your take. I was actually really pleased of the new idea. Not new, but it's new to the American. The idea about the preseason tournament we're going to have for preseason conference tournament they're going to have. What did y'all think about that?
Yeah, going to start the conference season now with losing UConn. To keep the same number of conference games, but we're going to do the first weekend of the regular season of conference play. There's going to be 2 4-team tournaments. One in year one, one's going to be in Tampa, South Florida, one's going to be in Orlando, UCF. Half the league will be in UCF, half the league will be in Tampa playing a tournament that weekend. You'll play three games, one team, each team once. And then after that, you'll play your regular conference series, so I think it's fair. I think
like round robin.
Yeah, I think it's fair. I think it's a good idea, and I hope it's not in Orlando and Tampa every year. I hope they switch the schools to host it.
Well, that was my. Yeah, I was going to ask you and Bubba. That was the one question I didn't know. Didn't have an understanding if that was going to be something that. Yeah, I love tradition, but at the same time, hey, if this is a way that we can make money. It would be great to move it around as far as the two sites.
Obviously, with
obviously this whole thing came to be because of UConn moving back to the Big East, like Kyle said. So, I mean, with that climate out of the mix, I mean, I don't see any reason why it shouldn't move around. I mean, because, yeah. I mean, there the other climates, I mean, whether it's out in Texas or I guess maybe that's what Cincinnati would be the one that would be the most sketchy for sure. But just taking a look at it, I think it should move around.
And maybe they don't want to host it. I mean, maybe if Cincinnati don't want to host it, maybe you do Tampa and Orlando, then Greenville and Houston, and you know,
Memphis.
Somebody else wants. Yeah, maybe then Memphis and Wichita. Maybe Cincinnati don't want to host it. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess Cincinnati and Wichita would probably be the two. Early season climates, and with Cincinnati being the most.
But I would have interest in hosting it. If they
absolutely.
Baseball. So.
And this idea, Dave, you were talking about it being new to the American. This is something the old Southwest Conference
right.
did back in the mid-90s, I guess, probably like when just thinking some of those defections they had. I'm trying to remember exactly what year Texas left, but – Right around then, that's when the Southwest Conference was employing this. They were calling it the first pitch tourney in 1995, 1996. But along the lines of baseball, guys, Pirates took on Liberty on Wednesday afternoon, 11-0 winners. It was a game we jumped on the flames early, and Bryson Worrell hit another three-run shot in the first inning, his fifth home run of the season now, and he's just been on an absolute tear with the exception of a couple of games, which you're going to have in baseball. And the Pirates are now 9-3. We had 11 hits, and in addition to Bryson's solid game, you also had Lane Hoover, Zach Agnos, and Connor Norby, all of whom had two hits.
Yeah, great win. Nice bounce back from two wins in a row. Bounce back from the losses to Ole Miss and Indiana. You know, I was thinking about this, guys, and thinking back to last year. And the reason some of the fans are a little ho-hum, despite the great record, I think it's because we hadn't had that signature winner of our quote-unquote Power Five. Last year, once we beat Ole Miss and then went and swept Maryland, I think everybody got fired up because of the name brand recognition, and we beat the so-called Power Five schools. I think that's probably that we didn't get one of those. We didn't beat Indiana, or we didn't beat Ole Miss. I think people are hungering for that that name brand win, which you guys got to realize, man. People in baseball, you know, there are a lot of good programs. Georgia Southern is a good program, you know.
Right.
It's not just the quote unquote
Look at William and Mary.
Five. Yeah, it's not just the quote unquote Power of Five. It's and they'll come. We get more shots at it. We get UNC in a few weeks. So, I mean, just enjoy these games. And two in a row, nice win over Liberty last night. And now let's go beat Charlotte.
Another Speaking thing of, that makes
– Sorry, go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to make a quick point and then pitch it to you. The thing I like about it, I was thinking about is it would have been nice to get a win over High Point. It would be nice to get a win over Liberty. But if you look at the way – we didn't play very well, okay, let's be honest, Indiana, but Indiana's a good team, and we made mistakes, and they made us pay for it, number one. Number two, that Ole Miss team is that pitcher, like he talked about, is his $1 million pitcher that's a first-rounder who decided not to take the money and to come to college is incredible. You look at the way that we dominated against High Point.
What do y'all think about that? Well, I mean, what do y'all think? Was he really offered $1 million signing bonus?
Yeah, I believe that.
I mean, what do y'all think about that decision? To me, it's stupid. I mean, I'm not insulting the kid at all, but in terms of that kid could ruin his arm. You never know what can happen. I mean, how do you turn that down?
There's some people that, as far as education-wise, and there's some people that want the – it would be like – I'll give you a perfect example, and I'm not speaking for him, but let's say Bubba or you, and I know what you would do, but let's say Bubba. He's always wanted to be the pitcher for the Pirates, and he's
Bubba.
A pitcher.
Ask him right now.
Do what?
Ask Bubba what he would do.
You would Bubba would take the money, I would guess. But I would think that if you have a dream playing for the Pirates.
Well, ask him.
That's the only thing that I would say. Bubba, would you take the money?
love the Pirates.
That's one of those things. As tough as it would be to say no, I honestly believe I would, with as many people as there would be calling me stupid, and who knows, maybe they'd be right. But I believe that you only live once, and I would play for the Pirates because me playing for the Pirates and having the opportunity to achieve those dreams, and that's something that. Yes, $1 million is $1 million, but I don't know. Just it's something you don't have the opportunity to get back.
You
can't get a chance to get $1 million back if you screw your arm up.
Right,
but you can argue both ways.
Just going to play for the Pirates and having the opportunity to everything and that entails. That's not something I'd want to pass up.
I get it. You love.
I'm just saying,
John,
if you grow up an Ole Miss fan, and you want to be an Ole Miss, and they offer you a scholarship, yes, you're not going to stay all 4 years, but you get the experience to play at a high level like you can at East Carolina. Get a chance.
Well,
to,
I agree with that.
I'm not saying not to turn the money down. I'm just saying you asked me why you would do it. I'm just trying to get in the scenario.
Yeah, I'm not saying, like I said, it's certainly what most people would consider an illogical decision. But just based on like what
if you're offered even $100,000 signing bonus, I could see turning it down because you can easily get a degree where you're going to make I'm going to make $100,000, in a year or 2 years easily. But
you remember that kid?
$1 million.
I'll give you a perfect example.
Wait a minute. $1 million is life-changing money. And I don't know this kid's background at Ole Miss, but I would bet you, I'd be willing to bet you he comes from money. Because I guarantee you, some old poor boy from Kinston, North Carolina ain't turning down.
That boy for living in Jason right now, I can tell what he would be doing. But
absolutely.
The kid, do you remember that kid back in, I want to say, the early to mid-90s, Brian Taylor? The kid from, he was given a lot of money from the Yankees. I want to say, was it Morehead City?
That sounds right.
Something
sounds
like that.
Yeah.
He just didn't have he was definitely a great talent, and I'm not trying to knock him. I don't know him personally, but
never
what
made
happened
it
to him.
MLB, but he made his money.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, if you have, like, your dream school, you get offered, and you have, like, and then imagine if you're a kid that plays for Cliff Godwin, and you've always wanted to play for Cliff Godwin and the Pirates.
Yeah, if everything goes right, that's great, Dave, because you're going to get your $1 million later, maybe even more. But my thought is, bird in hand versus two in the bush, man.
If somebody's offering
me $1 million, I love East Carolina, but East Carolina's not going to pay my bills. East Carolina's not going to have to give me financial security. That's the kind of money you don't turn down. To me, once you hit that $500,000 mark, I don't think you turn it down because college will always.
In my place right now, $1,000 sounds good.
College will always be there. You can't play, obviously, once you've taken that. But if your professional career falls apart, you can always go back to college. And now you've made a little money. And it's in the bank if you manage your money right while you're going back to college.
Right. Do you guys want to go to our next guest?
Yeah, let's catch up with Jason Beattie. The Pirates will be down at UCF, final game of the regular season on Sunday, and let's get Jason's thoughts on the Knights right now.
Well, Pirates on the road for the final time during the regular season of the American and Orlando, right, Bubba?
Yep, the Pirates will be down in Orlando on Sunday taking on the Knights. The second matchup between these clubs, and the Knights, of course, won 68-64 back on February the 6th. And right now, to get the UCF perspective on Sunday's ball game, welcome in from Knights 24/7, Jason Beattie. Jason, glad to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Absolutely. With Johnny Dawkins' club, I know it's been a little bit of a struggle this year. We had seniors last year, I know. for the Knights. How are things been since actually the, I guess, the month of February?
Not great. to sum it up bluntly, you know, this team has had issues from the start of the season, and you know, just two games in the regular season, things would have to drastically change very quickly to see any sort of postseason play at all. I mean, there was hope before the season began, even with the first few games entering conference play, that, you know, maybe this can be like Johnny Dockett's first season, where it's a group effort and everyone works together to get to the NIT tournament. And, you know, the month of February was just not kind. You know, after the ECU win at ECU, they beat Tulsa, which was a bit of a surprise considering where Tulsa is now. But they've really lost. They're on a three-game losing streak against – they lost a poor last few minutes of a basketball game to Tulane, couldn't handle UConn, and then in their replay against Tulsa, they just got pounded. You know, I think – and it's interesting because a lot of their issues, they know about the issues. They know about the turnovers. They know about the lack of rebounding. It's just, you know, when they don't hit their three-point shots or hit their shots, I mean, they're just not going to – find any offensive, any success on offense. And, you know, they're, you know, Johnny Dawkins' whole identity since he's been at UCF has been defense. And, you know, they might be able to hold your team to 50 to 60 points, but if this team doesn't hit their shots or find a score down late, they're not going to win the basketball game.
Jason, taking a look at things, that's what I'm talking about the Knights. And current struggles. Prior to the three-game losing streak, that victory at Fifth Third Arena inside the Shoemaker Center is something that's very rarely accomplished. Like you said, 14-11. I want to say after that one, and you really, it really appeared as though the Knights were headed in the right direction. Like you said, in order to be on the track to win the, or not win, but earn an NIT bid.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I had zero expectations entering the Cincinnati game. You know, you when you get a chance like that to beat a team on the road where they haven't lost, you can count on your hands how many games they've lost in the past 3 years at home, let alone conference play, but all together. I mean, you know, and when the game for the game to go to double overtime, and for this team specifically on that night, they didn't have Bazon Ingram. They had Tony Johnson Jr. stepping up, true freshman stepping up with Darren Green Jr. So you got to look at a glimpse of the future, you know, for UCF. But I think a lot of folks look at that game, 89-87, tight road win, double overtime. It says a lot. I mean, Colin Smith fouled out in the very first overtime period, and I thought that would be the end of the road for that game, and they just stuck out with it and stayed alive. And then just a few days later, at home against Tulane, they were up 7 with a minute 34 left, and they lose by 1. I mean, they were up 4 points with, you know, 17 seconds left, and they just incredibly found a way to lose that game. And since then, they've lost back-to-back. You know, it just everyone thought coming back on the road against Cincinnati, winning that game would, you know, a confidence boost. You get to see the young guys play. Maybe you can work a rotation a little bit, let the younger guys play a little bit more now that they've shown themselves. And I really thought that would be a boost for the season as we entered March, and the complete opposite has happened. I mean, really, I think every time we've spoken to Johnny Dawkins, it's clear how frustrated he is with how this team has handled just the last month of February. Really just, I don't know if it's lackluster or how they're playing, but a lot of folks pointed at the Cincinnati game and thought, oh, maybe they can do something. And something else would have to happen incredibly in the conference tournament next week for them to make the NIT to even make it, you know.
In that Cincinnati game, man, not only was it a double overtime victory for the Knights, but I had not seen that game live, but I was watching the highlights and just, I guess, what, fractions of a second as far as Jaren Cumberland would be half-court game winner. That was something else.
Yeah, the game was sent to overtime by his brother, who hit a three, just a ridiculous three. And then to get to double overtime, there was another big shot that was hit. And I thought for sure that – I was watching the game live, and I thought, oh, there's too much time left on that. They're going to be able to get something off. And they did, and he hit it. And, you know, I think if you look at the replay, Jaren kind of knew –
Yeah, I didn't get that off, but it was 0.2 seconds. I mean, anything else goes the other way. That was just an impressive effort by Jaron, and that says a lot about this UCF team, finding the way to win. And somehow they weren't able to take that and move it and grow it into something else.
A moment ago, you mentioned that name, Darren Green Jr. He was very instrumental in the Knights' victory in Greenville back almost a month ago. He came off the bench to play 17 minutes and knocked down 3 3-pointers in that game. And then you also had Matt Alon. Matt knocked in 5 from deep that night. Those two guys combining to knock down 8 threes, that was essentially the difference in the ballgame.
Yeah, I mean, that's not only ECU, but most of these games, if Matt Milan, it's rare to see a win from this UCF team without Matt or Darren or Tony Johnson or one of their shooters have a good game. I mean, even though everyone expected Collin Smith to be the guy and kind of, be that turnover from last year's successful team to this year's team, obviously, losing a lot of pieces of Taco Fall, BJ Taylor, Aubrey Dawkins, but Collin returns. Everyone thought he'd be the centerpiece, but you look at these losses and, obviously pulling together grad transfers and new freshmen and, kind of a ragtag group of players, it's difficult for anyone. But you look at the wins and the losses, I mean, it's obvious this team relies on that shooting from those players, especially Matt and Darren Green. I mean, when they're on the roll and they're hitting their shots, I mean, you're not going to beat this team.
As far as basketball recruiting goes for Johnny Dawkins, I know you were talking about grad transfers, a freshman, and
yeah,
I know that there's a disappointing season, but I know Johnny in the past has done a good job with recruiting. How are things for next season?
Yeah, so to answer your question, sorry about that, I would say, they signed two guys, Jamil Reynolds and Isaiah Adams from one from St. Pete, one from Jacksonville, so in-state kids. They signed them back in November during early signing period. And then they added Marcellus Avery, a pretty good player from Virginia. He was player of the year for his division. Not a whole lot of statistics about him, but they hosted him for an official visit this season. I think a lot of folks don't really like how Johnny's recruited. I mean, you can have one season of success with a lot of grad transfers, right? This is their final season of playing college basketball. So a lot of folks were upset with Johnny saying, you're not really building on the future. But you look at when they do win games this season, we've already mentioned Tony Johnson and Darren Green. Those are two of Johnny Dawkins' recruits. And you look at the guys that are coming in, 2 3-star guys who had other Power 5 offers, and Jamel Reynolds and Isaiah Adams. The kid from Virginia, actually, he was player of the year. He won a state championship for his high school. I think you kind of see this in football where maybe they don't go after the top star or whatever, but they go for players that fit into his system. And I think you see that in those players who he has signed and who's committed. Specifically for Jamil Reynolds, he had an offer from University of Florida. And he chose UCF over that. So to win an in-state battle like that, where you have a season where maybe things aren't going the way you are or the way you want them to, it still says a lot about Johnny Dawkins and the future of this program. I think this season was a bit of a break in case of emergency break glass on grad transfers, because he had to put something together. And I think that says a little bit more about when he first arrived and his lack of recruiting or successful recruiting. And now you actually see a focus towards, signing 3 kids, or at least signing 2 and have another verbal commit who's expected to sign. A little bit shift towards the future of having younger players come in and build the program.
Prior to getting to that matchup with the Pirates on Sunday, though, I know the Knights actually have a game tonight as we're recording this on Wednesday. SMU is coming to Orlando, so what can you tell us about that matchup? Is this the first time those programs have met this year?
Let me double check on that. It is the first time they're playing SMU. We spoke with Johnny this week, and basically he really wants the team to keep it simple. They've averaged, if you can believe this, 18 turnovers a game, which is just a crazy statistic. against the Golden Hurricane this past game, they committed a season-high 20 turnovers, and that's just unexcusable. So when we spoke with Johnny specifically for this game, you know, he really just wants his team to settle down and keep it simple. I think he's been saying that all season long to his younger players who try to do too much or put the team in a bad spot. But, you know, I think the players realize, I don't think it's a lack of talent. I think it's just they're overthinking things, and that leads to poor turnovers and poor ball decisions. And you look at, you know, SMU, they've only turned the ball, you know, they're just a better basketball team. Like, I would be surprised for UCF to win this game tonight. You know, but they can't turn the ball over, essentially. And if they can do that, and or at least, you know, if they can get only 10 turnovers compared to the season average of 18, that would be good. So that's basically what Johnny said, just basically keep it simple entering this SMU game. So I'll be interested to see how they play against SMU, kind of a more of a middle-of-the-pack team in the conference, you know, sitting at 9-7 in the conference. They're 19-9 overall, so we'll see what happens.
Now, forgive me if you've already said this, Jason, but on Sunday afternoon, obviously, the final home game of the year, how many seniors are there?
So even though, you know, there's not a lot of seniors that have been at the program for all 4 years, you know, the main senior who's been here for a while is Frank Burtz. He was part of the last couple seasons. And then, of course, Dazon Ingram with a graduate transfer from Alabama. He's obviously a senior. Matt Milan, a graduate transfer from William & Mary. You know, even though he didn't play UCF all 4 years, he's a local guy from Oviedo. He played at Oviedo High School. He'll be celebrating his senior day on Sunday. So three seniors. Sorry, I forgot to mention Colin Smith. I think he's a redshirt junior, though. But, you know, a handful of seniors, a couple of them haven't been with the program a whole lot, so I don't know how much it means to them. Obviously, it's still their last game, potentially, before entering, you know, the conference tournament in a UCF jersey at UCF on campus. So hopefully they can pull out a win on their senior day against UCU.
And I was
go ahead, Dave.
Jason, I was going to ask you that very thing as far as the conference tournament. What are your expectations and maybe the fans' expectations for next week in Fort Worth?
You know, it's hard to answer that question. I think a lot of fans would have liked to see more out of this team this year. They obviously understand the circumstances, losing three or four key players from last year's March Madness team. I think some fans, you know, understand the challenge that Johnny Dawkins faced this season, but you look at some of these losses, a lot of these losses, at least four or five losses, could have been avoidable. You know, you're not going to beat the Cincinnati's of the conference, but, you know, a two-point loss against Memphis, a one-point loss against Tulane, a poor performance on the road in Tampa against USF, you know, when you beat them at home. It's just some of these losses, I think a lot of fans don't have a whole lot of expectation for this team in the conference tournament next week. You know, I think if you had asked me that right after the Cincinnati game, you know, even me, I would have said maybe they can win one or two games potentially, depending on who they get. But now, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they don't win any games in the conference tournament next week, depending on the seedings and who they face in the first round.
Yeah, these two ball clubs, East Carolina and UCF, they're certainly, even though the Knights are 500 and the Pirates are 11-19, or pretty similar situations, like you're saying, as far as trying to establish some momentum going into Fort Worth next week in the conference tournament for sure. And do you think if the Knights do win these final two regular season games and did go out to Fort Worth and win a couple ball games and let's say finish 18-15, would the administration there at UCF entertain a CBI or something like that?
You know, I don't think so. You know, after their first NIT run in 2016, Johnny Dawkins' first season, they made it to the NIT Final Four the very next season. A lot of expectations. They thought Johnny's second season would have been how last season went, but, of course, Aubrey Dawkins had shoulder surgery. Taco Fall missed a lot of the season. BJ was out for a lot of the season, so things kind of derailed in Johnny's second season. and they didn't make the NIT tournament that season, and they didn't want to play in the CBI or any of the other postseason tournaments. I mean, I think that's, I don't want to say it's below the program, but I think a lot of fans would be disappointed in that decision. You know, I think because you have a lot of these graduate transfers, and yes, you have some younger players, but I think if you had this type of season, you know, sitting at 500 with two games remaining, entering the conference tournament where you were in some games and blown out in other games, if it was more of a much younger team and, a much, much younger team where with even more freshman or sophomore players and experienced players, then maybe I can see them wanting to play. But, you know, you look at the starting five or at least the seven players that get rotated in the lineup, and, you know, three or four of them are seniors or graduate transfers with no eligibility left, there's not much to build off of where, you know, I don't think the administration would turn towards playing in a tournament like that.
Right. And it certainly makes sense. But a final thought or two going into Sunday's matchup, a guy that played very well for the Pirates last time against UCF was Tristan Newton. He had 23 points, and then the Pirates' most recent outing against UConn, he had, I think it was 25 that he finished with on Saturday afternoon. And he's a guy, he's a freshman that has really come along, and his contributions, if he's able to have that type of production to go along with a typical performance by James Garner, it's going to take something like that in order for the Pirates to win down in Orlando on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if those two guys, like you mentioned, you know, do what they've done recently, again, I think going back, if I have to imagine, if I had to guess, UCF loses against SMU on Wednesday night, or I guess tonight, but whenever this gets, you know, shared,
right.
You know, I would have to imagine the message entering the SMU game would be the same entering the ECU game. Keep it simple, play your game. You know, Johnny Dawkins is fully aware of the talent that ECU has and the potential on that offense. And like you mentioned, they're kind of in similar situations, trying to grab the momentum here. You know, of course, ECU would love to upset or at least rain on UCF's parade of senior day on the afternoon game on Sunday. So just got to see what happens.
No doubt about it. It's going to be interesting. And certainly with the program, with Dooley's building, and I know Dawkins had a great run last year, and we'll see what happens this week. You never know with it. The great thing I was going to say, both of you guys, we'll let you go there, Jason, but you never know what's going to happen in the conference tournament. With this, there's been so much parity this year with all the teams, pretty much. So it's going to be crazy. It's going to be fun. I think it's one of those years that maybe you would think that some of the top seeds win it, but it might be one of those a Cinderella team. It could be UCF. Who knows who it'll be, but it'll be fun to watch next week. Thank you so much for your time. You've always been good to us. Appreciate it very much. Good luck this weekend, definitely next week in the tournament.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me on. Always a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Jason, and good luck to the Pirates. And obviously we'll see how Johnny Dawkins Club there with the Knights, how they've had a disappointing season, to say the very least, thing about 500. And I'm really happy with our program and the direction it's going. And, you know, Kyle was telling Bubba yesterday when we were off the air, I was telling him how you look at how many close games Joe Dooley's had. I mean, I counted it up the other day, and there's so many, including that one back a month ago against the Knights. It was a 4-point, what was it, Bubba, 68-64. And
yes.
So it's like the Pirate fans, if you're a casual fan, then understand to trust the process, because we've gone from literally getting blown out every night, especially in the American, which is a great basketball league, a great football league and baseball league. But anyway, now we're losing games. I don't like losing games at all, but at least now it's been fun. How do you guys, I want to get your opinion, hasn't it been fun this conference season to watch the game knowing that we have a chance to win instead of watching it because it's our school?
Yeah, it's a lot more enjoyable being in the game and knowing that there's an opportunity to get a win, playing well. And you can see the growth. You can see where some changes still need to be made. We need some more scorers. But you would think that even if we don't add, even if we don't add a scorer, but to be sure we will, that next year, the non-conference schedule, we should run through it if it's similar
to what
we've been having. And then you get the conference. Let's say you win 10 games non-conference and you win 6 or 7 in conference, and we're probably going to the CBI.
Yeah, we're definitely CBI. Possibly we could – might be a bubble NIT. I really believe
you have to
CBI,
do better than that
bubble
to get
NIT next year.
But you have to do better than that to get NIT. But nonetheless.
On the recruiting front, though, and you're talking about adding some options, Kyle, especially on the perimeter, because we do have Derek Kwanzaa coming in next year, another 7-footer, but and he's currently at Hargrave.
Team, right?
No, he's at Hargrave.
Yeah,
well, I remember talks about Kwanzaa a while back.
Yeah. Right. Yes, he's been in the picture for in the boat, let's say, for a while, but. Okay. And then you also have, of course, Luigi DeBoe, who is on the roster that went on the shelf.
Yeah, so way early,
four or five games into the season, and announced that he's having foot surgery. This is something stemming back to his time prior to ECU. But so on the perimeter, Coach Dooley and also Steve Rockefort, they've been on the recruiting trail. Coach Rock has been out in Utah. And I encourage our listeners to go to hoistthecolors.net to get that information. I knew that JUCO player's name. I want to say he was a point guard. It was Justice Hill. And then there's some other JUCO options that are more of the wing variety, anywhere from like 6'3 to 6'5. And so don't be surprised if we add one or two options. It'll be interesting to see who would leave, perhaps one of the 7-footers, and then maybe one guy from the backcourt as well.
Yeah.
That'll be great. Let's hope that we can do that. And the main thing, like Kyle said, is the very fact that we have these guys, they'll be together, and we have no seniors. This group, you give them one more year next year, especially in 2 years, my God, definitely have a good shot at being, by the time that Gardner is a senior, you definitely think that they'll have a good shot at the NIT by then. But anyway, are we you ready to go to our final guest?
Yeah, catch up with Joe Myancic. Joe's a Greenville native and an alum of East Carolina, and he's out in Houston working for the Roughnecks and the XFL. And let's go to that right now.
Well, Bubba, one of the guests we've been wanting on for a long time, he actually is originally from Greenville, a Pirate, and worked with ECU for a while, and now making his way and living in Houston.
Absolutely. One of Greenville's own, and now, like you said, with the Houston Roughnecks. Welcome into the show for his debut, Joe Myancic.
Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, it's been a process getting in touch with you guys, and with it being busy season right now, I know it's been difficult, but I'm glad I was able to finally work it out with you guys.
No doubt about it, Joe. We'll talk about your Greenville career in just a minute, and ECU career, and being a native Greenvillian, but let's talk about the XFL. All three of us off the air have been bragging about you and about how happy we are for you that you're in Houston. And, I mean, lo and behold, the season, I can't believe four games are already gone with game number 5 coming up on, I think you told me, Saturday. And you guys are 4-0. What's going on with the Houston Roughnecks? What in the world?
Yeah, it's been a crazy ride so far. I was up in Dallas for the game last weekend, and you should have just the energy that I experienced from both fan bases was incredible. But we probably had a good couple thousand Roughneck faithful that made the trip up from Houston, and just seeing their faces after that game was over with, just being a part of what was going on and watching the game with them throughout. It's easy to see right now that they're hooked. And this is, this Roughnecks fan base, this Houston market, they're really getting behind this team. And like I said off air a little bit ago, I haven't felt like this in a long time. It's since we've had just such a hot start. And right now it's a fun ride, and we're excited to see where it'll take us.
Joe, taking a look at things, I know you guys – you play at TD ECU Stadium, which is obviously the home of the Houston Cougars, correct?
Yes, sir.
So tell us a little about what the atmosphere has been like thus far. I know you're expecting the largest crowd yet here soon, I guess on Saturday, like Dave said. So talk about the atmosphere there at TDECU Stadium, because I guess what the first game that I watched was that game that was played up in D.C., and granted it only seats, 25 or 30,000, but it's a pretty full house for that one against the Seattle Dragons.
Yeah. I think there's been a couple areas out here in the XFL that have really, from a fan experience standpoint, you know, you think of Seattle, you think of St. Louis, that have been incredible as far as fan support goes. And I'd say we're right there, probably around number three in the league when you look at just fan engagement and different things going on. And I'll be honest with you, that first game that we played, it was on Fox, I want to say, against LA week one, I could probably rewatch that game every day for the rest of my life, and I'll remember where I was, what I was doing, who I was talking to, what I was feeling, because after going months of just phone calls, months of just trying to hype this up, no one really knew what to expect, and people were blown away with the product on the field. People made the absolute most of everything going on out there, and they were engaged. They were having fun. And the stadium is pretty new. They just renovated a few years ago, and it's just perfect for what we're trying to accomplish right now.
Now, obviously, the head coach for the Roughnecks is June Jones, very well known for what he did at Hawaii and as well as SMU. Of course, he took the Rainbow Warriors to the Sugar Bowl back in the days of Colt Brennan. But we'll come back to June Jones in a minute, but I wanted to mention some ties to the American Athletic Conference, not only with the XFL, but specifically the Houston Roughnecks. Pirate fans will remember P.J. Walker, the quarterback, of course, from the Temple Owls. He certainly had his share of success against the Pirates, as we well know. So in addition to him, you also had Khalil Lewis, a wide receiver from Cincinnati. Khalil has 21 catches for almost 200 yards already, so those guys are having a lot of success.
Yeah, PJ has been an absolute superstar, not only for us here, but, you know, league-wide. He's a name that a lot of people will remember from this season, and he's made the absolute most of his opportunity out here. He's got great you know, pocket vision. He can sense defenders from a mile away and can evade a lot of tackles. His arm accuracy is what's really impressed me the most. He can just make some incredible throws, but, you know, just having him out there and, you know, Khalil being a part of what's going on, you know, the first time I ever met PJ, the first thing I talked about was that, I want to say, what, the whiteout game where we wore the all white. I think we fumbled the ball, what, like five times on the road in Philadelphia, snowing sideways, and he was all smiles. You know, he said that we played a great game, but, you know, I was still salty about that one. But he's a good sport and a really nice guy.
Absolutely, in his opinion, and we certainly played the perfect game. If you're a Temple fan or Temple player,
yeah, but they had a good team that year. And PJ,
oh, yeah.
Greg Rule, Anderson, you know, that linebacker they had, that was a really talented team. And I told people all the time in the off season, he was a name that you had to remember because if given his opportunity, he was going to make the most of him. Sure enough.
Absolutely. Never did I think I would see the Pirates lose six consecutive times to Temple, but here we are. and so hopefully we'll snap that streak very soon. Kind of getting back to things with the XFL, I mentioned June Jones. Obviously, like I mentioned, he had that stint at SMU after all the success he had at his alma mater, Hawaii. And then Coach Jones now implementing that run-and-shoot system with the Houston Roughnecks. And I know most recently your fourth victory was over the Dallas Renegades, and the Dallas Renegades have a couple of Pirate connections and quarterback Philip Nelson and then also a cornerback Josh Hawkins, who's trying to get back into the NFL after some success with the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, no, that Hawkins probably played one of his best games of the year this past weekend. He was matched up with Cam Phillips, who Pirate fans will remember him from Virginia Tech. He had a couple great catches when we beat them in Blacksburg, and then he was pretty active on their team for a couple years. But Hawkins played great out there defending him. Nelson, he actually, I know that they had that pick at the end that really, you know, lost the game kind of, but that was, you know, a bad bounce. He did a great job stepping in at a time in that game when the cards were on the table late in the fourth quarter. You know, he came right off the bench and led the Renegades down the field and almost tied it up or maybe even could have won. He certainly put them in a position to succeed, and, you know, he's another guy who probably for the next couple of weeks is going to get some extended looks.
Certainly seems weird with football being played at Globe Life Park, the former home of the Texas Rangers, but I guess now that I'm sure the venue may be used for something else in addition to the XFL, home of the Dallas Renegades, but the Rangers are obviously on the Globe Life Field right next door.
Yeah, it's a beautiful setup they have with AT&T in the backdrop, Texas Live right in the middle of it, tons of hotels, retail outlets. It's a really nice facility, and I think we will see them utilize that park in a number of different ways, not just XFL, whether it's, you know, concerts or different community events. But there's ample parking. It's a really nice little setup, and that new stadium that they have is going to be amazing. I saw some renderings for it. It's going to be state-of-the-art in there.
Something else that transpired, I believe it was in that game with the Dallas Renegades, obviously they're offensive coordinator is none other than Hal Mumme, the former Kentucky head coach, who Mike Leach's roots can be traced back to with that air raid offense. But Coach Mumme, I saw a play on the sideline, and I saw him tweeting out that he is not soft. So he had his leg broken. I'm sure you were at the ball game, correct?
Oh, yeah, I was there. I remember the play. I didn't realize he'd broken his leg until afterwards whenever the story kind of emerged. But I remember the play, and I saw someone go flying out there, and I was like, oh, goodness gracious. But, no, he stuck it out, and I think that just speaks to, you know, that was a big game for the league as far as, you know, in the West. You know, when you got L.A. at 1-3 and Seattle at 1-3, if Dallas wins that game, all of a sudden they're tied at 3-1 for first place, two games in the playoffs. And with only two teams making it from each division, that would have been huge for him. And so, you know, he definitely put his best foot forward, and he wasn't going to – you were going to have to drag him out of that stadium because, man, I think at that point they were losing by a couple scores, and he really turned it on there down the stretch. And in the second half, it was a whole different ball team that we were playing against, and, man, they almost snuck it out.
So in addition to the players we've named, those two Pirate connections and also P.J. Walker and Khalil Lewis, who are some other connections with the XFL from the American that you may be able to spit out right off the top of your head, or at least, if not connections with the American, maybe to the state of North Carolina or just college football in general that are kind of your household names that folks would recognize?
Yeah, I know just on our team two guys that maybe haven't had the greatest years yet, but they're still tremendously talented, would be Sammy Coates at wide receiver. He played at Auburn and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Andre Williams almost won a Heisman at Boston College. He's a running back. But when I think of the Americans, some of the people that come right off the top are B.J. Daniels and Quentin Flowers, two electric guys who you know, I think Quentin, if given a little bit more opportunity out there, I mean, he's extremely good and talented. But BJ, he stepped into the spotlight this past weekend and had a great game on the road at St. Louis. He's with the Dragons right now, and I bet you he's going to start seeing some extended looks as well moving forward. In fact, he's probably going to be starting against us this weekend.
So kind of shifting gears here, Joe, and so Dave mentioned in the open, we wanted to talk some about your time at East Carolina. Obviously, you're a native Greenvillian, I guess you could say. You attended D.H. Conley High School. And so just talk about growing up in Greenville and then going on to East Carolina for your college years.
Yeah, I tell you, I was probably about 5 years old when I told myself I was going to be a Pirate. I was at the 99 game against Miami. That was the first ever football game I ever went to in Raleigh. And just after that moment, I was hooked. Just that 99 Floyd game out in Raleigh after Dennis and Floyd had come through, made it out there with my mother. And, you know, I love her to death, but she made us leave that game with about 3 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, and so I missed the final touchdown. I still kind of hold that against her. But after that moment, I was just hooked. And so growing up in Greenville, it was the perfect setup where you didn't have to go that far to see your favorite team play. And, you know, meeting all the players and figuring and just seeing the importance of the university and the community, it was just a really cool feeling, you know, with your friends. At any given time, any season of the year, you had something to do and someone to support. And so win or lose, you know, they're always my team. And that's one of the things that I guess we're having to taper out here is, you know, after starting 4-0 in the first ever season, everyone's head over heels. Being from Greenville, it's always like that. And so one of the my strengths back home was, you know, I was prepared to talk to Pirates. So I was blue in the face about just past experiences and all the good times and how we're on the right track getting back there. And, you know, here it's, we've had to kind of create this energy from the ground up and really build it. And now that we've got a little exposure, it's pretty crazy just seeing how hooked everyone is out here on the product.
Spending a little more time on that 1999 Miami game, that was actually my senior year of high school, and so I was on an unofficial visit for that ball game in Raleigh at Carter Finley Stadium. And having spent all my life as a Pirate, I can certainly see how that would have gotten you hooked on the East Carolina athletics and specifically East Carolina football, because that was just a remarkable night on so many levels against the number 9 team in America with the Miami Hurricanes.
Yeah. No, that was a very talented team. You know, you go look on Google right now, Wikipedia, at that roster that they had, you're going to see a lot of names. And just to be able to have that, you know, the community needed it at a time when we were at our lowest, you know, when that, just nothing was going right. And that football team really, really pulled a lot of people's spirits up. And we were prepared to take on whatever challenges were to come. And to this day, I mean, everyone I talked to who was at that game left feeling the same way. And I think that really, you know, helped us rebuild and grow from there.
Like you said, that Miami team was absolutely loaded. And that was right before Butch Davis left to go to the Cleveland Browns. And then you had Larry Coker taking over. And 2 years removed from that 99 season there in 2001, they, of course, took down Nebraska in the Rose Bowl to win the national title. So you had the likes of, of course, you had Kenny Kelly starting that year at quarterback, but you had Ken Dorsey that was on that roster that led them to that title run. And then you had the likes of Bubba Franks, who played a tight end in the NFL with the Green Bay Packers. And then you had Santana Moss, Reggie Wayne, Dan Morgan, et cetera.
Oh, yeah. It was. What, Edgerrin James is probably out there. Yep. Clint Portis, you know, there's just
Clinton Portis.
Yeah, Frank Gore somewhere in there. Ed Reed probably on the sideline somewhere. No, that was a very talented team, and you know, definitely for us. I mean, that was a really big win, and you know, we ended up having, you know, a pretty good year. But that was, man, when I think back of just, you know, what got me going, that was definitely it. And you know, obviously basketball, I'm lifelong fan there as well, baseball, but it all stemmed from that one game.
So, Joe, I know you mentioned that you're a 15 alum of ECU. So during your years, and you were fortunate to be able to be there at a time where we weren't going through what we're currently going through. You were able to experience the good years that we had under Coach Ruff, where we went to bowls there in 12, 13, and 14.
Yeah, no, it was a good time to be a Pirate. It's always a good time to be a Pirate. But, you know, just for me personally, I'll always think back to those years in college when, you know, we put up 70 on Chapel Hill. You know, we should have won Conference USA Championship. I know that I was there, goodness gracious, that UCF Hail Mary game, that one still haunts me in my dreams. That we won the CIT, baseball was doing big things. I mean, it was just, it was all around a good time. And, you know, the community out there really responded well to it. I mean, you know, I could tell a difference when I was there this past time. And that's actually what drew me back to come to ECU when I did, because I knew things were hurting. I kind of wanted to do what I could to help. And, you know, because I remember those good days. And I remember, you know, everywhere you went, people had smiles on. Everywhere you went, people were talking about the game last night. And people were making their plans, booking their hotels. You know, it was goodness gracious. I remember we met the basketball team at the airport, man. It's been a long time since we've been able to do that.
Absolutely. That CIT run. I was like, man, I said, if our fans are acting like this now, and it's understandable why the support was what it was with that success we had with the CIT run, because folks outside that didn't realize how poor East Carolina basketball has been historically, that they didn't get it. They're like, it's the CIT, and like, well, when you've been as bad as we have, you're so hungry for any success. So just hopefully I can't wait till Joe Dooley and this staff really get it rolling, and hopefully that will be something that will be occurring again with the team being welcomed home.
Now I'm certainly optimistic, and you know, in my time in school, I was the vice president of Minji's Maniacs for 3 years. We actually got it reaccredited as a recognized campus organization in my time, and I remember when Bam Bam had his recruiting night. I remember that was actually against Temple. I remember the poor Vaughn Gaines hitting that buzzer beater against UCF. Oh man, I remember when UCF hit that half court shot to beat us. Like, it was just there was a lot of excitement in that building, night in, night out. It didn't matter if we were playing Coker or we were playing, you know, UConn. You knew that you were going to have to deal with some Pirate fans out there, and you know, it was really cool being a part of it as a student, and then transitioning into my career, being a part of it as well.
Now, speaking of UTEP, it's funny you bring up them. Of course, they were coached by Tim Floyd, who had previously coached, I guess, Iowa State, and then also the Chicago Bulls. So, were you at that ball game when Coach Floyd got tossed?
Oh, yeah.
As well, and his assistant got tossed as well. And Coach Floyd didn't take too kindly to one of Greenville's finest, one of the Greenville PD there, grabbing him by the arm to escort him out of the arena.
Oh, no, that was one of the craziest games I've been to in a while. You know, you couple that with the Shamar Bowden incident. I remember they had a guy named Cole Pepper. He's about 5'2", but he could dunk over anyone. They had some really exciting teams, and Tim Floyd, man, he, you know, that Minji's got the best of him that night. You know, he's not the first coach. He won't be the last, certainly, but I'll never forget that one.
And speaking of Minji's getting the best of somebody, this is well before your time. This would have been back during your elementary school years, back when the Pirates were in Conference USA with the likes of Louisville and Marquette and so on. But I remember, I'll never forget, I wasn't at the ball game, but somebody actually did and captured this on video, I believe, and posted on Boneyard Banner or something. I remember Rick Pitino entering the arena there. I guess it was 2001, 2002, something like that. And he tripped over the cheerleader mat that was out there at the time.
Man, goodness. Well, I tell you, that was a little before my time, but I was in daycare with kids whose families were big ECU, you know, supporters. And I remember we beat Marquette those back-to-back years at home with Dwayne Wade getting dunked on in one of those games. And there's still footage out there. I don't know. I don't think it was Holcomb Fay. I don't think it was Bing. I forget who it was. Maybe Derek Wiley went up there and just absolutely threw a monstrous dunk down and rode on his shoulders for what seemed like an eternity. It looked like he was on a bicycle on top of Dwayne Wade.
Yeah.
And that was an amazing time. And I want to say the Maniacs back then, that was their heyday, really, when you had the Billy Goat out there giving students pizza when they stood in line to get their tickets. Bill Harry, and you want to talk about someone who wore his emotions on his sleeve. I mean, every now and again, that jacket would come flying off. Something was up.
Absolutely. Like you said, I was there for that Marquette matchup. I was not there for the first one when we beat them earlier that spring. It was pretty crazy to beat the number 9 team in the country twice in the same calendar year, and And I'll never forget that dunk that you're referencing. It was Belton Rivers who ended up.
Belton Rivers, there you go.
He transferred and played for Tennessee Tech after that. I don't know what happened there, but Belton Rivers, he made that alley from just inside a half court, and when he threw it, I was like, well, I had my doubts as to whether Derek Wylie was going to get it, and needless to say, he got it and sat on Dwayne Wade. Face in the process. That was the infamous, and odds are we don't have any younger listeners, but that was the infamous teabag dunk.
That was I kid you not, I watch that video probably about once a month. I'll just get this urge. It's like an old ECU highlight video posted 13 years ago. It's got highlights from like us playing Louisville at home, Houston, Cincinnati. And then you get right there at the end that dunk, and if I could put it on repeat, I would. But just I need to get better at this editing software stuff. I can just, because man, I wouldn't mind making that my screensaver. That's a good one right there.
No doubt. And some names from that era. We've been fortunate to have Errol Bing, and then also Moussa Badian. We actually caught up with him from his home in France via Skype. So that was a lot of fun. We thought we had it set up, but had some issues with Skype. We're trying to get Gabriel Mikulas from that same era. He's back down in his home of Cordoba, Argentina. And so we're working on figuring that out.
Now I don't think he ever missed a free throw, Nicholas.
Yep, Gabriel Mikulas, and he was one of those. He was your stereotypical international player from the standpoint of he wasn't flashy, but when you watched him play, I mean, he just knew how to play. He had so many good post moves and knew how to use head fakes and his footwork to create shots. And like you said, get to the free throw line, because he certainly got to the free throw line a ton. And when he got there, he rarely missed.
I tell you, we've had some great players come through the years out there. I was watching a James Leakin highlight tape the other day, Courtney Captain, Gary Monroe. Oh, my goodness. One of my favorites. We've had a string of decent guys, and it's only a matter of time before we put it together and take that next step.
No doubt. And speaking of the current guys, they're going to be part of the ones putting it together. And how about Tristan Newton from out there in the great state of Texas in El Paso? UTEP and the others out that way certainly missed on him, and that's fine with me, because as soon as I saw his video, I was like, this guy's a player, and here in the month of February, he's had at least three, maybe four 20-plus point games. I know he dropped 25, the Pirates' most recent outing, on Saturday against UConn.
He's been taking over, and that's one thing. I always try and catch the games if they're on ESPN, watch ESPN. I really like the new floor they put in out there. I think I've got all the faith in the world in Joe Dooley. I know it's been rocky, but at the same time, it's not going to happen overnight. And, as far as basketball fans, we're patient. We're a patient bunch. I know he's doing great things. I got to know him a little bit when I was there at ECU, and all his assistants, the staff, everyone. They're great people, and, you give them enough time, and they're going to get this thing right.
They are, no doubt. Like you said, Coach Rockefort and Rafael Chilius and Kyle Robinson, that staff, they're going to really get things done, no doubt. Speaking of some staff, former staff that you had the opportunity to work with, did you get the chance to know during those years? I say work with, but maybe I don't know exactly what you did during your student years, but Terry Holland, Ruffin McNeil, did you get a chance to know those guys any?
Oh, man, yeah. I got to know quite a few people, and they had some great Terry Holland stories for me. I only met him a few times. My favorite was when I'd see him walking home after a basketball game. He'd be over about by F, just waving at him out the window. Always had a smile on. He was a really nice guy every time I crossed paths with him. And old Ruffin, I think I encountered him a few times. My mom was friends with his wife, actually. She was her water aerobics instructor, so they were buddy-buddy for a little bit, too. But they definitely played a role in our community, both of them. for quite a while.
Here recently, I didn't have the opportunity to speak with him because he was being bombarded, but I actually crossed paths with Terry Holland. I was over at a Davidson game. I'm trying to recall who they were playing, but it was Letter Winners Day and or Hall of Fame weekend, whichever. I guess both. Coach Holland was being bombarded by, of course, all of his Davidson friends and fans. So didn't have the chance to speak with him, but it was great to see he and Ann Holland doing very well.
That is awesome. They definitely played a role, in my Pirate tenure, whether I, recognized it right off the bat or not, but, that they made a lot of decisions for us that really helped progress us, move us forward. I've got all the respect in the world for both, Ruff and Terry, but certainly I know that in their heyday out here, they were very important in the community, and we still feel the effects of some of the great things that they were able to accomplish for us.
No doubt. Joe, you've been very generous with your time. We certainly appreciate it because we know the time difference here on the East Coast, obviously. So we appreciate you carving out some time for us. And as we let you go, why don't you tell our listeners how they can follow you and then also the Houston Roughnecks on social media, and then any final thoughts you may have about the league and your organization.
Yeah, certainly. I'm on Twitter. I don't tweet a ton. I'm not that active on social media myself, but if you were interested, you can find me at Joe Mayancik, MayanCsik. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, everything. It's just an exciting time. One of the cool things about this experience is that I took it knowing that one day I'm going to tell my grandkids about this. And to be a part of this from the beginning, it was a blessing in disguise, really, just rolling the dice and coming out here, because I've got to meet so many awesome people, not only in my field of work, but also in this community. And they're very similar to us in a lot of different ways, with all the devastation that they've had in, the hurricanes, natural disasters out here. This Houston community, they rally behind each other, just like people in Greenville do in times of need. And it's a really cool being a part of it from a social standpoint, going volunteering, and you've got CEOs out there just in their free time just helping. And that's been one of my biggest takeaways. There's so many friendly people here. From day one, I've been accepted and welcomed, and it's been really nice. I'm really looking forward to the championship game, which will be in Houston, as well as and we got three more home games here, but this one coming up on Saturday, I implore, I hope everyone here takes some time just to tune in and check out the product if you haven't already. And if you have, you're going to be impressed with the amount of people you see in the stands. Hopefully PJ scoring a lot of touchdowns for us, but at the end of the day, everyone's going to be having a great time out there. I'm going to be right in the thick of it, running around like a crazy man. I'm excited.
Absolutely. Well, again, we appreciate your time. We'd love to have you back on the show here in the next couple months, maybe getting closer to the end of the season to talk not only Houston Roughnecks, but also some East Carolina athletics.
Oh, anytime. It's my pleasure. I appreciate you guys taking some time to have me. And, I'm always down talking to ECU athletics. People here in the office are about sick of it. But, I am who I am, that's for sure. But I really do appreciate y'all.
Absolutely. Continued success. And that was the other thing I was going to say. Keep sporting that purple and gold out there in Houston, and let them know who's ascending in the American.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's a weekly basis. I talk about that 2009 championship game with some of the Cougars out here, man. But, no, I will, and I really do appreciate this, guys. Hope y'all have a blessed day, and keep doing your thing.
Thank you very much, Joe, for being on with us, and good luck to the Houston Roughnecks 4-0. And I tell you what, I've been impressed with the play, as I talked about in the interview with Joe. I didn't expect – I guess that's one of the – I want to get you guys' take on this with About Life. Isn't it funny how I had no expectations for the XFL, maybe because of what happened last time. It was more like a – more campy, over-the-top, more like wrestling. Now they have football people running it. They've got some decent talent. I have to say, I've been pleasantly surprised. The football has been, from what I've seen, I haven't watched every game, and obviously that, bits and pieces of games. But I've been pleasantly surprised, a lot better than what I expected. It's like going to a movie, having high expectations. A lot of times you'll be disappointed, or you can go to a movie, taking a chance, and it blows you away.
Yeah, I haven't watched a lot of XFL football, but people seem relatively pleased with it. Just in terms of life, expectations do matter, and sometimes when you set your standards low, and you shouldn't always do that, but sometimes when you set your standards low or your expectations low, sometimes you're pleasantly surprised.
Guys, on the women's sports front for the Pirates, I wanted to mention, I mean, the ladies will be up in Connecticut at the Mohegan Sun Arena on Friday taking on 8-seed Temple, and the Pirates did take down the Owls in regular season 56-50, and that will be on ESPN3 at 2 o'clock on Friday for anyone who can tune in. They have been playing very well in the month of February, and they did, I think, pick up at least maybe 5 AAC victories in the month of February. So, and in this club, we've talked about how Kim McNeil's clubs down through the years, be it at Hartford or elsewhere, and they've been notorious for forcing a lot of turnovers. And this year, the Pirates set a program record with 397 steals, and obviously still at least one game to play. Go ahead.
I was just going to make a quick thing that Kim McNeil on the Patrick Johnson show, I think it was last week, I didn't know this, guys. How about fourth in the nation on steals? I thought that was fantastic. I didn't realize that, but I'm not a stats guy, but that really stood out to me.
Yeah, that's something that's been critical this year. I mean, we have not shot the basketball well at all. I think from the floor, and this isn't from three, but from the floor, we're shooting like 35% or 36%, something like that. And then from three, it's like 25% or 26%. So these turnovers have been critical in creating some easy scoring opportunities for a team that really needed it. Softball out in Fresno this weekend at Bulldog Classic, and they'll be taking on UC Davis on Friday at noon, and then also number 25 Fresno, obviously the host team, at 8 o'clock. They'll take on UC Davis and BYU on Saturday, and then wrap things up with North Dakota State on Sunday. The ladies right now are 11-7, going 3-2 last weekend in Lynchburg at a tournament there hosted by Liberty. And right now, they're really swinging the bats well. They have 5 players that are hitting 327 or better. And you have Rachel McCollum that has hit a team-high 6 home runs. And then NC State transfer, a third baseman, Chandley Garner. She's from the western part of the state, up north of Winston-Salem, North Stokes High School. She's hitting 364 with 4 home runs and nearly 20 runs driven in. And I wanted to point out, so much has been made of baseball being hashtag #2AU, and with the likes of Alec Burleson and Ryder Giles, et cetera. Logan Estes, a freshman on the softball team, right-handed pitcher. She's 6-1 in the circle, but she's also hitting 365 with 3 home runs and a team-high 6 doubles. So that two-way theme has translated over to softball as well. And then last but not least, the women's lacrosse. Last year, the Pirates won 5, 2 year one, 5 a year ago, and they're already off to a 5-1 start this year, have won 5 straight after losing their opener down at Furman. So they'll be back in action on Saturday, 1 o'clock against Army at Johnson Stadium. And then on the men's side, something I know you wanted to mention, Dave, that I forgot to mention earlier on. Okay. Ryan Davis, who's a veteran thrower for the Pirates. He is in the NCAA tournament as part of the weight throw.
Yeah, and also I wanted to mention for baseball, the Wood Ducks are announcing, it was already on the schedule, the Pirates and UNC Wilmington would be playing at Granger Stadium, and the Wood Ducks have released a statement on that game, and hold on, I have it. It is, hold on, give me a second, guys.
I believe that one's in April.
It is.
It's on my birthday, I think, April 14th.
The Down East Wood Ducks will host the college baseball game between East Carolina University and the University of North Carolina at Wilmington on Tuesday, April 14th.
My birthday.
Happy birthday, Dave. Come on to the game with us. The game will be played at Granger Stadium in Kinston. Gates will open at 5 p.m. First pitch is scheduled for 6:30 p.m. If you want tickets, this is what you do. That's a weird link. So I'll tell you what, we'll provide the link on our Facebook page. But it looks like there's a specific link created through the Wood Ducks to buy those tickets, actually. So if you've never been to Grayson Stadium or you haven't been in a lot of years, it's a good ballpark to go to. That game's got a good little Will and the Creek on Rise. I will be at. You guys need to come join me at Historic Ranger Stadium, watch the Pirates and the Seahawks, and let's pack it out. It's a good fun atmosphere.
We're gonna have one big birthday party for me. Sounds great.
We'll do it, man. We'll do it.
All right. Do you have anything before we go, guys?
Thank you to our guests, of course. Robert Woodard, the head coach of Charlotte, Jason Beattie of Knight 24/7, and Joe Myenfit of the Houston Roughnecks.
All right, for Bubba Rosenbaum, Tom from McGrain's Barber, and all our great guests, as Bubba mentioned, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.